This is the March 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Today, we'll hear from the All-Day Ag Outlook, recorded on Tuesday, March the 4th, at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Joe Jansen, agricultural economist from the University of Illinois, set the tone for the day by laying out the fundamental picture of corn and soybeans in the United States, usage, and the impact of global stocks and trade. Now, here's Joe.
I'm going to just sort of talk through the situation as it stands, where we're at. I think the watchword of the day would be uncertainty. I think a lot of people have sort of heard that word thrown around a lot. There are these like market sentiment or consumer sentiment indices you'll hear about these. These will kind of always make news when they get released. Basically, what they do is they ask, you know, sort of, what is your opinion on the current situation in business or employment or sort of consumer spending, you know, your own spending, your own sort of personal financial situation? And it's usually sort of like they ask a person, they say, is it positive, neutral, or negative? You know, people weigh in, and then we aggregate that across lots and lots of people, and we kind of get a sense of, you know, sort of how are people feeling about the economy? A lot of you may have seen Purdue does something very similar for ag. The folks over in Purdue Ag Econ, which is a useful and sort of interesting thing that I look at. I don't know what it really means. 8 years ago, it spiked in November of 2016. It did that again last November. I'm very interested to sort of see where we go with that sort of idea of like sentiment. But I think there's a sort of a sense in which like a lot of our ag economy is kind of, driven by sort of sentiment and vibes at the moment. And I think hopefully we want to put something a little more solid, some more meat on those bones. So I'm going to talk a little bit just sort of about how we've got here in terms of price history, talk about sort of like, we sort of think about both on the supply side, what does production look like next year? And how does production news play into the market situation that we're going to see? And then I think a lot of uncertainty also on the usage side and sort of how do we use up the crops that we grow? We saw USDA put out their Ag Outlook Forum numbers for next year last week. And I mean, we are going to plant a corn and soybean crop in this country. How are we going to use that all up? And then we'll sort of think about what sort of other stuff might be sort of on the horizon. And then I think ultimately the last part of it is sort of how do we react to or sort of, you know, the fact that none of us really has control over where markets will go. But we all know that those prices, those two numbers, the price of corn and the price of beans, really affect the bottom lines of many people in this part of the world. And we really want to understand sort of, okay, how do we react to it? How do we sort of market grain in the current marketing environment? So I'll start just sort of thinking about a little bit of price history. You know, obviously last spring prices fell into the summer with sort of a few things. I think one being sort of just there was, you know, adequate grain supply in the world, broadly speaking. Maybe it's a U.S. crop, maybe sort of slightly, you know, kind of came in. We thought we had sort of maybe a trend line yield crop, and we maybe came in slightly below that. But given the world supply situation, there was plenty of corn and beans around. That put us into what I think of as kind of like the long run low-ish price levels that we should see when the market is adequately supplied. So that's something like low $4 corn and approximately $10 beans. That's where we were. And then we really saw strength, particularly in corn demand, through the fall and even into January. Really strong corn export demand that really created some marketing opportunities for corn. I think we've moved a lot of that old crop corn. Hopefully, we started to think about marketing new crop. And that's one sort of thing I'll say is, the one thing that we can do in the current marketing environment when marketing is particularly challenging is just stretch that marketing window as wide as possible and take advantage of all the opportunities that we have to sell grain. But there was really strong corn demand. And where did that corn demand come from? That was really a Latin American story. And we know that in the last month or two, there have been sort of particular challenges with our relationships with trading partners in Latin America. So our two of our biggest corn buyers, the biggest by far is Mexico. They have been aggressively buying U.S. corn this year. We've seen really strong export numbers. And that's sort of, I think, the big reason why we saw corn kind of get to close to sort of $5 on the board and kind of be there. And hang in spite of a whole bunch of sort of negative news, the speculation of a trade war, et cetera. We got there because of, you know, really strong demand for exports from our trading partners in Latin America. The other thing that we've seen, I think, sort of, so in terms of that, that's the price level story. Obviously, the last 2 weeks in the corn market have sort of turned that all around. We'll talk sort of broadly speaking about where do we go, but obviously a really strong downward move in corn prices. The shine is sort of off in the corn market. The bean market obviously did not rally to the same degree. We haven't seen the same sort of export sales strength in beans, and so we've kind of been hanging around that $10 bean mark, with some, you know, with some fluctuations around that point. The other thing I look closely at, obviously, are spreads and basis. The one thing that we have seen, and spreads really tell the story of the spreads and basis really tell the story of movement of grain through the supply chain. We had really seen, particularly in like short term corn spreads, a really strong carry build up. So March to May, that spread widened out pretty far. It was about 15 cents. I mean, as that March contract's rolling off the board now, it's almost moving, I think, closer to 20 cents. Really, what that's telling me is that, you know, we have moved a significant amount of particularly corn and beans through the grain handling and supply chain. We've moved that. The market seems to be pretty well filled. The belly of the market is pretty full at the moment. And there's not a strong incentive to move a lot more grain in the short run, and markets are sending that signal. We saw, yeah, again, both that sort of short run spreads kind of really widen out, and then basis, particularly about sort of in January, sort of some move against the seasonal trend in basis to sort of a weaker basis levels, really saying, I mean, there's not a big incentive to move grain. So that's sort of where we're at. And then in the last 2 weeks, this sort of corn market collapse. And we can talk about what that is.
I'm your Commodity Week host, Todd Gleason. We're listening to a presentation made by FarmDoc team member and agricultural economist at the University of Illinois, Joe Jansen.
So I want to talk about sort of fundamentals. Really need to think about how do we use up the crop that we have. And it's sort of important to kind of like set our sort of view of, you know, the demand pie, if you will, sort of what are the biggest shares of that pie? And sort of as this all this news affects, you know, there's a whole bunch of sort of big picture global geopolitical kind of factors affecting our markets. I'll talk about those in a second. But before we can really dig in on those, it's important to think about sort of the relative sizes of the demand pie. You know, for corn, it's really, this is a largely domestic market. And I think that's sort of a trend that we have seen, is sort of the idea that, you know, we want to be masters of our own house. We want to sort of have strong domestic demand for corn and soybeans, given the importance of those two crops to our ag economy. For corn, that's largely the case, with, you know, feed and ethanol demand kind of each being about 35 to 40% of that pie. So that gets you roughly to, you know, between 70 and 80%. Of the demand pie in any given year is ethanol and ethanol and feed demand. Obviously, we've seen cattle markets continue to sort of keep their strength, and the question is sort of when does that finally trigger a rebuild in the cattle herd? Given that we haven't got there yet and it hasn't happened, I think USDA and all sort of any sort of fundamental analysis sort of saying that that feed demand will continue to very slowly grow over time. That's kind of baked into our expectations of demand already. The ethanol, but those two pieces, that those feed and ethanol pieces, tend to be pretty stable. Where we get sort of the most flexibility is particularly on the export side for corn. And I've already talked a little bit about that. Is a really a Latin America story at this point. We had seen really strong corn demand from Asia in the last maybe 3-4 years ago. But really, our biggest trade partners for corn are in Latin America. So that's the corn demand pie. And then we think about that soybean demand pie. And the two are very different. So think about domestic meal production is about 45%. So some of that meal maybe got exported, but 45% of it is domestic meal production. About 10 to 12-15% is domestic oil production. So you think about we've moved towards more domestic crushing. We've all seen the build out in crush capacity that's happened in the last few years. A lot of that is driven by biofuels demand for soybean oil. But that soybean oil demand is maybe 5 or 6% of the pie. So it's roughly half of the soybean oil that we use in this country now, moving up over time, but about half of the soybean oil that we produce from domestic crushers is used for biofuels. I think there's, again, a lot of uncertainty about the continued demand for soybean oil as a feedstock in biofuels production. And then the other part, the other 45% of that soybean demand pie is exports. So exports really critical. China is obviously our biggest export partner. We've long known that. So think about roughly 20% of the beans in this country is going to China. We've had some negative news about that. So that's sort of the demand pie. I'm going to think about, okay, how does it affect that? Well, we can talk about the prospects of a trade war. We've talked about that, I think, for the last few months, the prospects of a trade war ever since the election in November. President Trump told us he was going to initiate this trade war. And I think today, this morning, it's finally here. The United States imposed tariffs on Canada, Mexico, China. And those countries swiftly announced a set of retaliatory tariffs on the United States. The numbers that I saw were 15% tariffs from China on corn and wheat, an additional 10% tariff on U.S. soybeans going into China. What do I think about that? In the short run, I think the pain will be relatively limited in the sense that we've moved a lot of the soybeans that we were planning to sell to China. A lot of those have already moved. We have very, very, not a whole lot of outstanding sales of soybeans to China still on the books that would need to get filled and subject to the tariffs that were announced today. So really, this is a sort of next year story. And what does this do to demand for U.S. soybeans? Given the importance of exports, we're going to try and find alternative markets. What we saw during Trade War 1.0, I don't view that as like this is how it will go again. The world is a different place than it was in 2018 when we had the last sort of version of this. But I think it's instructive to think about sort of how did the market process this news then? And what we did see was, some trade diversion. We started moving beans to other countries. But we can't replace our largest buyer. That just simply, it does not sort of fit into the global supply and demand picture to sort of put that kind of barrier to trade. This is a boon for, this is absolutely a boon for Brazil and Argentina as the other main sellers of soybeans to China. Every sense that we have, though, I think roughly, in terms of how does this fit into demand, supply and demand for U.S. corn and soybeans, everything that would say they have a reasonably good-sized crop coming. Lots of news, weather sort of news coming out of South America. Is it raining in Argentina this week? I try not to get too up and down about that stuff, but I do look at it and say, okay, broadly speaking, the crop is going to be there in South America. The global supply and demand picture is going to get filled up by a reasonably good-sized crop there. Maybe there's a little bit more uncertainty about the corn crop coming out of South America just because we're still later or sort of earlier in the calendar. A lot of that corn won't get harvested until June, July. Given that we don't sort of see anything that's sort of particularly threatening on the weather news side for that South American crop, I think, should we move forward with the expectation that they will fill up their share of the global supply picture?
Joe Jansen is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois, a member of the Farm Doc team. We're listening to a presentation he made to the crowd gathered for the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, on Tuesday, March the 4th. Now, here's more with Joe.
The other part of this, again, we saw tariffs on trade with Canada and Mexico. I can say that those two countries, particularly on corn and beans, particularly for Mexico, but Canada is also a massive trading partner for agricultural commodities with the United States. We have roughly, fairly balanced trade in agriculture with those two countries relative to China. We export a ton of stuff to China. We import very few agricultural products from there, right? That's why ag is a target, right? With China, it's really obvious. Ag is a target because we sell them a lot of ag products and they sell us almost nothing. We buy a lot of other stuff from them, but not ag products. With Canada and Mexico, we have relatively balanced trade. And so this is going to hurt us both from sort of, we import a lot of a diverse set of ag products from those countries. The tariffs are going to hurt U.S. consumers who buy a lot of the stuff that we buy at the grocery store comes from Canada and Mexico. And then, again, Mexico is our biggest corn buyer. There's a sense in which I think, why has Mexican corn demand been particularly strong? Because of the threat of a trade war and the desire to get out ahead of that. I can say, so as you know, I do speak to people in Canada quite frequently. My dad and my brother actually farm up there. And I think there's a real sense in which the very longstanding trading relationship that has been very open and relatively free, with the exception of a few products, things like dairy from Canada, there's a sense in which that trading relationship is being seriously damaged. And I mean, I think you can see, a very much an acceptance of like, okay, we need to fight back against this in a way that maybe wasn't as true during Trade War 1.0. That's kind of like what I hear from the people I talk to up there is like, okay, I think, we don't like this situation. This is not where we wanted to go, but we have to fight back against this. So that doesn't sort of help. Certainly doesn't help the situation. Canada being sort of not just from a sort of corn and beans perspective, but a corn and soybean products perspective. Canada is a huge customer for U.S. or for U.S. ethanol. I would sort of view that ethanol export demand as maybe potentially problematic going forward. Okay, so that's the trade war. And I see very honestly very little positive there, in part because the effects on prices in the short run. I mean, we saw the bean market maybe off 15 cents this morning. I think the corn market was off 7. So the market didn't sort of say, okay, this is in the short run very, very bad. But it just does not give us a lot of upside as we go into 2025. Other things on the demand side we want to think about. I think the other part when we said uncertainty is kind of the watchword, uncertainty about biofuels demand. We've seen moves by the EPA to expand E15. That's sort of an ethanol demand positive. But without sort of really strong policy certainty, and my colleague Scott Irwin will talk about this afternoon, I am sure. I mean, the ethanol market, the biodiesel market, the renewable diesel market are all policy-based markets. And there has been a tremendous amount of policy uncertainty in terms of what specific tax credit, other sort of real financial incentives, not just sort of like we will loosen up and allow the fuels industry to use E15, but like what sort of monetary incentives will be there. There's been a lot of uncertainty. So with tax credits for things like sustainable aviation fuel, the Biden administration never sort of got there and left it sort of hanging. And then I think we've gotten really no more uncertainty. And we're starting to see things like, airlines, Southwest Airlines last week said, we're basically tamping down, shutting down a lot of our sustainability initiatives. I view that as, again, possibly a negative for biofuels demand. There's just not a good strong reason to think, if people are going to only make those investment decisions when they have a little bit more policy uncertainty, and that does not sort of seem to be in the cards in the short run. So I won't sort of go too far down the biofuels road. It's, you know, Scott will be here later this afternoon. I'm sure he'll have thoughts on that. The last piece is sort of like, okay, we are going to plant a crop in the United States. USDA came out last week with their Ag Outlook Forum numbers, which I don't think were particularly surprising to the market. I mean, the market did react a little bit. That's part of, you could argue, what is it driving some of this like short run negative move in the corn market, this sort of 50, 60 cents that we've seen come off of corn prices in the last 2 weeks. Some of it had to do with the idea that we're going to plant significantly more corn acres in the United States than we did a year ago. USDA's projection was 94 million acres of corn. The trade was sort of maybe on average saying, thinking something maybe a tiny bit above that. So I think a lot of that was sort of to be expected. Everyone knew we were going to see more corn acres. Relative prices for corn and beans for new crop, you know, say new crop futures, the ratio of corn to beans was screaming for more corn acres. To an extent that we haven't probably seen in 15 to 20 years or more. So that ratio of soybean prices to corn being, you know, down around 2.2, that's well below sort of long run average levels. That was, again, saying the U.S. farmers being incentivized to plant more corn, they're responding. That's filling up the corn balance sheet in a way that, like, you know, I think the corn balance sheet had, you know, from USDA still has reasonably rosy expectations for usage of corn next year. So they're projecting, you know, increases in feed demand, you know, relatively stable use for ethanol, which is, I think, again, both of those things totally reasonable to expect. And then I think a pretty decent sort of projection for exports that we'd only drop about 50 million bushels out of U.S. corn exports next year relative to this year. And I think, again, you have to imagine that there's a lot of uncertainty around that corn export number, given all of the stuff that we've seen in the last 24 hours. That doesn't make me sort of necessarily any more, you know, there's, again, not much to be sort of particularly optimistic about on the corn balance sheet.
Again, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to a presentation made by Joe Jansen to the audience gathered at the LDAG Outlook earlier this week in Covington, Indiana. We've gone through corn and the balance sheet. Now Joe starts in on soybeans.
Soybean balance sheet is another story because those acres have to come from somewhere. And the bulk of the move, you know, people will look at sort of things like sort of aggregate acres and our farmers sort of bringing, you know, we do see sort of at the margins, these things are relatively small. They're not happening right here in Indiana and Illinois, certainly. That's not the place that we get acreage expansion or bringing acres into production 1 year that weren't in production last year. That acreage flex is happening in places like the Northern Great Plains, so places like North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana. It's happening in places like Kansas where you can flex between a lot more crops. So we're sort of, some of that'll sort of, some of those bigger corn acres are coming particularly from soybeans and then sort of at the margins from other places. USDA is saying 84 million acres of soybeans next year. That is going to kind of, I think, underpin the bean market and kind of keep us at this, you know, around this $10 level. There's The one thing to sort of say about, I think, both markets, given the sort of production news, is that, you know, there's relatively you know, not as far to fall because we're at sort of those long-run low-ish price levels. The last thing to think about sort of on the production side, and how much time I got? 5 minutes? Okay, we'll leave some time for questions here too, Todd. It's just acreage projections. I think around this time of year, we get a lot of skepticism about USDA, or sorry, yield projections. A lot of skepticism about USDA yield projections. If you go back and sort of look at the long run yield trends in the United States, it is, to me, incredibly surprising, in spite of all the stuff that we do in terms of like the yield challenges that we've faced. You know, think of herbicide resistance or, all kinds of weather, you know, sort of changing weather patterns, all this stuff, all the technology that we've brought to bear to deal with those challenges, And what we see is essentially a long-run, straight-line, linear trend in yields that has persisted now for certainly, you know, for a really long time. And the last few years, sort of since maybe 2016, 2017, we've seen sort of slightly below trend yields for corn and soybeans nationally. So we don't quite get to that linear trend line. And USDA is building that into their expectations, certainly. They came out last week and said a 181 US corn yield. That's, again, indeed slightly kind of below what the long-run trend would have been if you start to project it. USDA, a long-run trend says basically we will build about 1.5 to 2 bushels per acre for corn nationally into yield every year. We didn't quite get, we haven't got there the last few years, but if you keep projecting that trend out, we should be at something like a 182, 183 yield based on a sort of 30, 40-year trend. And USDA has kind of said, well, maybe we're not getting there. And so their projection's at 181 right now. But even still, that would be kind of a bigger national corn yield than we've ever seen in the United States. So a lot of skepticism about, can we even get to that number? But if you sort of fact it, again, you're fighting against a very long run and very stable trend that you sort of have to believe it's something in the very short run that's not sort of just statistical noise. Is not going to sort of play out in the year ahead. The same thing is true for beans. I mean, a lot of people saying 52.5 bushels per acre as a national bean yield is incredibly optimistic, given, again, we've never seen that before. But that's what those sort of long-run trends mean. So recapping that, how do we sort of react to this? I think the two things that we can do in terms of how do we market grain in this kind of low price environment where, I've kind of told you a lot of negative stories, is to think about, one, expanding the marketing window as wide as possible. Think about all the marketing opportunities. All the research that we've done suggests that farmers market a lot of grain later in the year relative to earlier. My thing is to think about and sort of, as we think about what's gonna drive that yield number and ultimately the size of the US corn and soybean crop, maybe not a weather event that sort of plays out, but like a weather scare. And those tend to come along in June and July, May, June, July, August. Those are grain marketing opportunities that need to be seriously considered by the farmer. So that's one piece. And then the other piece is just sort of, again, try and be as consistent as possible. Have a marketing plan that commits you to action as we go through both the pre-harvest and then post-harvest kind of marketing windows. So that sets up the conversation for the day, not particularly with rose-colored glasses on, but that's never kind of been my thing, Todd, as you know.
Indeed, I know. So the barometer that you talked about from Purdue, you started with, it just came out this morning.
Oh, good.
Month over month. Did it go up or down? Do farmers feel better or worse this month? Who thinks they feel better this month than they did last month? So it was for the month of February versus the month of January. Who thinks farmers felt better? You guys are not very good at getting what Purdue gets out of their farmers. Purdue's number went up 11 points to 152 this time around. The range runs from about over the full time from 88 to around 185. So farmers feeling pretty optimistic, at least when Purdue
surveyed them back in early February. With that caveat, right?
Like that's, in early February.
That's maybe with a lag. But yep. That's super interesting to think that, y'all are more optimistic than I am. That's good. That's probably good. So, I mean, you'll probably get through life and you feel a lot better about yourself.
I didn't hear, in your supply demand tables, did you give them season's average cash prices, what your expectations are?
I did not, Todd.
I didn't think you did. What are your expectations for new crop?
4 and 10.
Joe Jansen is an agricultural economist, a member of the Farm Doc team at the University of Illinois. He spoke at the 35th annual WILL All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, March the 4th. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to Commodity Week.